Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to listen to. This is coming a little bit out of order in the way that I've read the books and then reviewing them, because I do have an Alistair Reynolds book that I finished 2 days ago and was going to review, but then Juliana finished a book. And it was always the plan that I was going to read it. So Juliana is joining me here. Say hi.
Hi, everyone.
And what's the book then? Are you going to do a quick say why you read this one?
I listened to it as an audiobook, which is why it always takes a bit longer.
Yeah.
And I listened to it as a German translation.
Yeah.
And it's called Replay by Ken Grimwood.
Yeah, and this was one of the times when it often happens like this. If we start reading a book together, especially if it's an audiobook, we start reading a book at the same time, generally I'll finish the book like a week later, and then Juliana 3 or 4 weeks after that, then you'll finish the book, because you just have a different reading schedule to me, you know, in different different ways, especially, as you said, if it's an audiobook, because I make time to listen to audiobooks a lot. I mean, I finished this book off just this evening when I went down to juggle, and I mean, I was listening to music and the music that I juggle to, but also it's really handy for me that I get more time in listening to audiobooks, I guess.
Your life schedule just fits it a lot more. And yeah. Pretty much the only place where I listen to audiobooks is when I'm driving in my car.
Yeah.
There's no other place, really. Like, I sometimes, I finished this audiobook, like, it had an hour left. Yeah. So I was just laying on the couch. I didn't feel that great, so I couldn't really do anything else. So I was laying on the couch.
And you gave it a go.
And yeah. I just listened to the end of it.
Well, that's cool. So Replay, so you finished it like 3 days ago and I started it like 3 or 4 days ago, whenever it was, and then I finished it this evening. And we tried to, I said, oh, well, you know, you were like, let's record the podcast tomorrow. We'll do the podcast tomorrow. But then we couldn't not talk about this, because I literally finished this book an hour ago.
Yeah.
And we were trying not to talk about it. And in the end, we were just like, we can't not talk about this book.
It was always like, oh, I want to say this about it. And then, let's keep it for the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. You would say something, and then instead of me replying and continuing the conversation, I'd be like, no, I don't want to reply. But then we actually just want to have this conversation. So we haven't really discussed this book that much in detail. Quick overview. Yeah, Juliana was saying, how much can we say about this book, you know, spoiler-wise and things like that. So the quick overview of the book, it's a time loop story made famous by, say, Groundhog Day, where someone goes and replays or relives a part of their life.
One day
in Groundhog Day, over and over again, has the memories of what goes back, but can't take anything back in time. The only thing that is transferred back in time, the only thing that's transported back in time, like we say, is information inside the brain of the person, the hero of the book.
Whatever. Only that one person.
Yes. And this has been explored quite a few times, more recently in the movie, I was going to say All You Need Is Kill, but that's the Japanese story that it was based on, and it was called Not Live, Die, Repeat. What's the one with Tom Cruise?
And Tomorrow?
No. Yeah, Tomorrow.
The Day After Tomorrow.
No, not Day After Tomorrow. Tomorrow Never Dies. No,
no,
not that one either. Live, Die, Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow.
It was something with tomorrow.
Of course, the reason why I can't remember the name is because they kept changing it. You know, it's not Live, Die, Repeat. It wasn't that.
Also,
it was,
like, by the way, totally offset. Yeah. I just watched a movie called, in English, called Tomorrowland. Yeah. But the German title is
A Land Beyond.
Something you think, okay, this is the English title because it's in English, but it's not. Yeah. It's the English title.
Well,
I
think the English name for that is Tomorrowland. Oh, no, what is it?
Tomorrowland.
Oh, it's just Tomorrowland. I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's
quite confusing with movie titles.
All of this one, the Live, Die, Repeat one with Tom Cruise is directly references Groundhog Day, because it's difficult to make a movie like that. People were calling it, you know, Saving Private Groundhog or whatever it was, because it's like, invade the beaches of Normandy, Normandy invasion, but with aliens and also time looping. And the main character, the main characters in Groundhog Day is Phil and Rita, and in here, I can't remember Tom Cruise's name, but it's also Rita. Yeah. And you're like, Rita's a really strange name for someone to have, like that to have now.
It's surprisingly, like, why is it there? Yeah, like, how many people do you know called who are called Rita?
Yeah, how many English women aged, 30-something these days are called Rita? But it's totally different from someone from Middle America, Ohio, or Pittsburgh, like, or wherever they're from. Yeah, what's that?
Like Gretchen.
Yeah, so anyway, it's interesting though, they know that they're referencing Groundhog Day by calling the second main character in that one.
Yeah.
She's a lot more than just a love interest in that one, because she also has done time looping, but she's called Rita there. Anyway, so what I'm trying to say is replay is in this mold, but instead of replaying one day at a time, it's around about 25 years, you know, or it starts off as 25 years. And so it's someone going back in time and looping through life, knowing what they know, not the whole life, they don't go back. Another book which happens in is The First 15 Lives of Harry August, and that's a book that I reviewed I think last year or the year before, and Replay is one of those books. It's about a guy called Jeff Winston who keeps going back to when he was 18 years old in college and looping around. And this is a very highly recommended book for me to read. For the reason is because another time looping book where somebody relives a chunk of their life over and over again is my own book that I wrote myself, my own first published novel, which I wrote I came up with the idea in 2002 or 2003 or something like that. I actually found some of the original. We talked about this in the podcast. We've reviewed this. Yeah. We've talked about this in depth. My own book, Minding Tomorrow, where it's about somebody's mind going back in time and them reliving their life, knowing what's coming up in the future. It's my own style of this. And because people read that, they were like, hey, this is very much like Replay by Ken Grimwood, and you should read it. But I've not put it off because of that, but it's one of those things that I kind of just go, well, I kind of don't want to do it, because in case I ever go back and do some more edits on Minding Tomorrow or do a rewrite or work on it more.
You don't want to be influenced.
Yeah, I can't, but I don't want to be influenced in a way of going, making it like more like Replay by Ken Grimwood. But I also don't want to make it less like Replay by Ken Grimwood. And I think now that I've read Replay by Ken Grimwood, I thought it was like, oh, somebody just living their life again, oh, this is a story, you know, it's not original to maybe it's not original to Replay, whatever, but the idea of somebody looping through time and reliving the time over and over again, I thought that just that main conceit was the thing that Replay and my own story Minding Tomorrow had in common. But then I read it and I was like, oh no, there's way more. Like, the same thought experiment that Ken Grimwood did is the same thought experiment. I mean you run this thought experiment over and over, you come up with those same solutions,
of course,
you
know? Because I mean that is the question. It also got recommended to me separate, like, I mean, of course, mainly via Goodreads, and people know me from your podcast, so of course they would say, hey, you listen to this, and often or sometimes it happens that I then will read the books that got recommended and then tell Luke, oh, let's do this together.
Oh yeah, you like should read it.
With Song for Arbonne, for example. It was with this,
you were just like, you're gonna like this one, or we're gonna have something to talk about if you read this.
And so this time I picked it first, and then you had a reason to then, of course,
spend an Audible credit,
exactly,
get it myself.
So that was the reason why we now actually finally got around to it.
Yeah, finally got around to it. Yeah, otherwise I probably wouldn't have read it. And now I have read it. It's, again, you just asked me before, what did I think of this? Did you like the book? And I just had to say, kind of not really. And I know it's a weird thing to say that, but like, it feels in a way to me, and this is not a criticism of the book as it was written.
Yeah.
But there are so many things where people will create something and it's like, in the end, it's kind of a rough outline of what that story could be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a rough outline of, like, it's like a first marker, you know. And then when people know what the story is, then someone who doesn't need to have come up with that idea from scratch originally, but who's, say, you know, a better storyteller or a better writer, or it just needs to be translated into the correct medium, or all these different kind of things. Like, there are different ways of, like, there's different ways. I mean, I said to you, there's this, with the Beatles, I think that was that when I mentioned it before, like a few days ago when I first started it.
How, when you listen back to the beginning of the music,
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. When you listen back to what it was like when you got people in a room and had, you know, multi-track recording of rock, you know, pop rock music, whatever it is like, you listen to that and you go, okay, I understand what they were going with here, but the technology and the techniques hadn't been developed enough for this to sound really amazing. And you can get some of that if you listen to, like, the later edits. There's some stereo, you know, edits of the, you know, re-recordings. And it's, but I saw this review of a... the original cast album recording, I've not listened to it, but of the Jersey Boys, which is all Frankie Valli music.
Oh yeah, that kind of stuff that I have no idea about.
But I'm not talking about the, you know, do you know it or not, but the review was like, you know, this original cast recording is better than the original songs because they would stick like three microphones in a room with all musicians, play it live like four or five times, take the best take, and then that was the finished version.
Yes.
Whereas this is like a full, you know, pop production of a modern versions of those kind of things. Now, I'm not saying that's the same with Replay, but it definitely feels like that Replay is kind of like the first version of what this story could be, and it explores a lot of the similar questions, but it's just been done better by...
Since then.
By every other repetition of this story, of a story of people's lives repeating, and somebody going through life and, you know, kind of knowing what's happening in the future or coming, like all of the other versions of this story that I've read or seen or watched on TV have been better than this.
Yeah.
And it's, and I'm not taking away from Ken Grimwood in this way, because he wrote obviously an influential book or one, he, you know, he was there before with the people. Maybe there's other time loop stories of this kind that came before, but it did feel like I was treading ground without getting anything new, without getting any new messages in a way. Does
well,
that make sense?
It does make sense. And I totally understand what you're saying about this. But for me, it actually felt, on one hand, it was super, like, like long and stretchy and
pacing
stuff.
Is an issue.
I just wanted to ask you how would you draw a pacing kind of diagram.
I know this
and,
is
but
oh yeah, carry
first,
on.
I want to say that I really like what he did to the genre of looping. He really went into depth, like, because we get to see not only like in Groundhog Day, we kind of get just pretty much like the bits and pieces, like in a montage at the like at the end, you see what he all did.
I was praying for some montages in this book.
But this is kind of like, one end, I found it really good that we kind of got like a bit more of what happened and not just like, oh, these are little steps and stuff.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it was just, come on,
it's
more
really
like quick.
The long parts of this book are really slow.
Yeah.
And it's kind of not the fault of Ken Grimwood, because as he was, like I say, as he's writing this book, when it's the first example, you're having to explain it. And this happens in time travel all the time. When H.G. Wells wrote the story, The Time Machine, there was no machines that took people backwards or forwards in time. It was just fantasy stuff, you know. And he says, I have made a machine that goes through time, and but when it's traveling through time, it's like it's really moving really quickly, so people can't see it going through time, but so it doesn't bump into things as it's going through time. Like, it looks like it's not there because it's spread out over the time, and then it arrives in the new time, and it's there, and you can travel into the future, and you can travel backwards and forwards through time. And once he'd done that, nobody else had to go, ah, right, this is our time machine. You know, it's kind of like established there. And it's the same with Back to the Future, which is kind of, and even The Matrix, when they kind of introduce these ideas so well that you don't have to say, ah, we're living in a computer simulation, this is the red pill, this is the blue pill, we're doing all the kind of stuff.
In another story, it's like that, you can just reference it, and you kind of...
Well, you don't even need to reference it. People just
put in that environment.
Yeah, people just understand the rules of what it is. And this is a book which is kind of establishing rules, which we all know. I mean, this was written in 1986. Back to the Future came out in, what, 1984? The next one's 86? Like, Back to the Future 2 and 3 or whatever?
Back to the Future actually came in 1986.
86, Back to the Future was as well.
Yeah. 85.
Oh, okay,
July
85.
85.
Yeah, so, but I'm thinking the next one where it's more about, you know, the whole thing. Like, you're going back through time. And what do you know? You can bet on something. You can bet on a sporting event that you know about. And, like, sure, this came out in 1986. The book was published, and the follow-up movies for Back to the Future came out, what, like 87, 88 or something
I don't Back to the Future is actually, the second movie is more Back to the Future.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The second one is like, they go, like, we've got to go back to, well, it's, you know, it's kind of mentioned at the end of it. When Back to the Future Part 2, I know they came out within
89.
A year. 89. So, yeah. But the point is, by the time that Back to the Future, everybody knows Back to the Future that Biff has the almanac and he can bet on sports and stuff like that. And Ken Grimwood was there a bit before, but the amount of time he's talking about, oh, betting this and betting that, oh, and then I bet here and then I bet there, but it's never really expanded on. It's sort of like he's always talking about who won the World Series. Oh, Super Bowls, they only started in the 1960s. There hasn't been a Super Bowl yet, so I can't bet on that. And horse races, and it's all about, oh, I do the thing with the
race. I think the horse race in total was mentioned 10 times.
Yeah, it's it's nothing about when Ken Grimwood was writing this, because you're like, oh no, just remember, if you ever go back through time. But now it's just established with Back to the Future and these other things, this is what you do, and you invest. And even this, it's the same, and like I say, it's the same scenes that you have where, like, oh, I'm investing in this company, I'm investing in that company, which And it comes back down to...
And then I become a really big, rich guy.
Yeah, but I'm only working... But I only make... You know, I only pick stocks. I'm not controlling anything. So I'll all be doing that. And yeah, so I made a note here. Betting on sports, investing in IBM. And there's even a scene where it's sort of like they go and meet the Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak in the garage and give them and buy 49% of Apple or something he buys.
Yeah.
And it's literally a scene out of Forrest Gump. It's sort of like, yeah, and then Lieutenant Dan invested in a fruit company or something, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's sort of like, we know this stuff, and I have talked about this in science fiction before, when you go back and you read the classics of, or the founding documents of this,
the foundation,
there has to be something more than just the original idea, which has been done many times since then. And I do think what H.G. Wells has in his favor is that the time machine and you know, War of the Worlds, they were kind of like seminal works, and but they stand up today because when you go back and read them, they're still saying things which make you go, oh right, like, yeah, you're sure you're explaining this and it's a historical document, but you kind of see how much more has been based on that. But even then, you read it and it still makes you feel things that you've not felt before.
Yeah.
Like when you read The Time Machine and it keeps going further and further until, like, the Earth is dying and the sun is dying. And then you see these, like, this, there's like a rabbit kind of creature and it's running around and you're like, oh, that's what humans evolve into. Humans lose their, like, any consciousness and they become, you know, stupid mammals, and then there's a jellyfish thing at the end. And you're like, oh, is that the far future of humanity? When the sun is dying, all of life comes down to, like, these floaty jellyfish things, and that's the far future of humanity. Yeah. It makes you go, oh, like, and you don't get, I mean, even if you do that in other books, that total, like, that extrapolation out into the future, from the concept of somebody being able to travel through time in a time machine all the way to there, it's kind of like, it's so complete, it's so, like, fundamental that you can read that. And when you do read that, you're like, oh, wow. Like, and even when I was saying, like, I read Tarzan, and you think, how many times has the Tarzan story been told? And I read the Tarzan book, and you know what? That's really good fun. Like, 100% racist. It's awful. But when you're reading it, it's actually fun adventure and interesting characters and characters that you like doing interesting stuff. And you're like, oh, right, Tarzan of the Apes. I totally understand why this is foundational. And there's a whole, many franchises, or all these franchises have been based on this. You know?
I think that replay has one of those things that really got to me when I was listening to it. And I think that is the thing about what happens. Because if you live, like, in Groundhog Day, he lives one day.
Yeah.
Which, of course, he repeats the day and stuff, but he doesn't really lose anything over his life.
Yeah.
This guy achieves something, and then, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but has kids at some point.
And he loses, and the kids will never be there again.
Yeah. And I think that was something that I have never really read in this kind of way before. And it really, like, because he kind of... he researched this whole matter in such depth, like, which was dreadful at some points, but also really thorough.
What you
in
mean,
others.
Like the thought experiment, the thought experiment research,
not only like for a day or a short time, but like a certain period of time that gets repeated over and over, and you keep all the thoughts and stuff. And then what I found interesting was when we were saying, like, okay, I met this person not like 10 years ago, but 60 years ago in my life.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that I haven't read anywhere else like this before.
Oh, okay. Not even in Minding Tomorrow, where I do the same thing. Well, not. I mean, it's not quite as blatant as that.
Yes.
I do understand what you're saying. My problem is that this one of these main events in his life, which his what was his name, Jeff Winston.
Hmm.
He has a daughter. I can't remember her name now.
Isn't it also Gretchen?
Gretchen? Was it Gretchen? I think you might be right. Let me go across. I have it here.
It is.
Yeah.
I think it actually is.
Yeah, so he...
I just find his name so funny.
But he doesn't... No, it's not here in the Wikipedia page. But it could be Gretchen. Yes, I think it is Gretchen. You're right. But so he has a daughter. The daughter is in it for like 4 paragraphs.
Yes.
And then she's out of the book. And then it's a lot of him saying, oh, I miss my daughter.
Yeah.
But it really annoyed me that she came and went in a montage, and then it was such a big thing that impacted him. I never got to know that person. I never spent... I wasn't there when she was born. Like, if it had just been a scene where she was born...
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was sort of like, I was together with this person.
Yeah, that was one of the times, like, I think it would be so cool. Maybe we can... Can we add a PDF with a drawing at the end?
Of what? Like,
of like a...
Of the diagram of what it is.
Of a speed... diagram.
Oh, you mean, okay. Should we talk about pacing now?
Because I think this is crucial in this book.
Here is the problem. With all of these time loopy things that go on, there has to be, if we talk about Groundhog Day, his loop through his life when we don't know who he is. Oh, sorry, we find out who he is before he has the superpower or whatever you want to call it, the ability to go to get so unstuck in time.
Long story at the beginning.
So yeah, it takes like 25 minutes before we ever get the first him going back in time and the alarm clock going off and him going, oh, something's weird here. That is fundamental for establishing the character of Phil, for him to then develop through the book and we get to know him more. And he starts off as evil Bill Murray and he ends up as nice Bill Murray. Whatever, you know, not that, mind-blowing a transformation and kind of an obvious transformation, but a transformation which is so well established at the start that when it happens, you can be in tears in that movie and it's a modern day classic movie.
Yes.
You know, there's that level to it. And in this book, we start with him dying and going back in time, which means that we get straight to the action of somebody looping back through time.
Yes.
But then it's sort of like, then we get a point where there's a bridge that he destroyed. You know, remember that there was a bridge that he destroyed?
But that was actually... Already later.
No, yeah, that was later in the book, but that was earlier in time. Because it happened when he was at high school rather than at college. And I'm thinking, how... I never got that story as being foundational. And it felt like it was like, oh, I have to have a meaningful story that happened. But it can't be too bad because this person, we have to spend time with this person and we can't not like them.
Mm.
But they have to have some kind of darkness. Otherwise, they're just too likable and too nice all the time and can have sex with any woman he wants all the time or whatever it is. And it felt like, oh, we've got to add in some darkness in there. But then that never came back later on. When they meet the serial killer later on, there was never a moment where he said, look, we've all got darkness inside of us. I once destroyed some gift between this man and his wife, and it took him months to build this bridge for his wife. And I just went along and with rocks and just destroyed it. And then I was caught but got away with my crime. And there was no consequences for me. And I'm like, this is not... Like, what's going on? Like, there was never an establishment of this character to get to know the character before we understood that the time looping was going on.
Yes.
And it felt really slow at the start.
Yeah, it did.
Without any real character establishment going on.
And also, I think it happened too much at the same time. So you had this one person that was actually 43 years old, went back to his earlier life.
18 years old.
At the same time, we got to know his 18-year-old and his life at that point.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, on top of it, we got to know what the 43-year-old was doing in his old life.
At
the same time.
And it's too muddy.
It was so confusing.
Other time loop stories have established that you got to spend time with a character. You spend time with Tom Cruise at the start of Live, Die, Repeat. And And also, it's really handy that there's alien invasions and in, yeah. and gunfights and cool science fiction-y stuff going on. Aliens,
life.
Like, and this is the kind of thing, if you're going to have, you know, if you're going to talk about philosophy and politics, always start off with, you know, dropships dropping onto an alien planet and gun battles at the start. I mentioned that in the Starship Troopers review when I reviewed Starship Troopers. It's like there's this big action scene at the beginning, a big action scene at the end, lots of talk about politics and personal responsibility and all that kind of other kind of stuff, and military training in the middle. But it's like, but you started off with, you know, dropping onto an alien planet and having an adventure with guns and stuff, and you kind of got to do that kind of thing.
Also, you have to get to know what kind of character the person is in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I think it was meant to be that that Jeff Winston wasn't a nice guy in his life, but because he had like this marriage at that point was a bit weird, but we only know a bit of it.
This is the issue. Okay, so let me talk a little bit. I know this is a weird thing to talk about a book that I wrote myself, but this is also, before I get onto this, Groundhog Day, not only one of my favorite movies, I've written a musical about Groundhog Day. This is a work. This is a concept that I know really well, like the concept of looping timelines and story, like what the structure of them is, something that I've written a novel about. Actually, three novels that complete a cycle of this kind of stuff. Actually, four novels, all set in the same world where stuff is going, in the consequences of time travel and all this kind of stuff. Not just on the people time traveling, but like the consequences of time travel for the wider world, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, I've explored that in literally four novels and written a musical based on Groundhog Day. Like, this is my home territory of, you know, this is, if there's a wheelhouse, this isn't just my wheelhouse, this is on my seat in my wheelhouse and stuff like that.
Which is why you kind of put it...
I kind of put this off because, again, I have enough of this story in me already. Yeah. But it's the same with... Also, First 15 Lives of Harry August is a post-Groundhog Day time loop story. Mm. In other words, it's someone who knows all these things that I've already said and is then right now, once we've established that when you live your life over and over again, or a day over and over again, you grow as a person and it's all zen and stuff like that, you know. Yeah. That kind of stuff is right there in Groundhog Day. We don't need to explore that anymore. We need to tell a different story. And in, I don't want to spoil First 15 Lives of Harry August, it's another time loop story, but there's like cool time travel war through the ages, sending messages backwards. You know, there's a whole community and society of people who also, you know, loop, who are loopers or repeaters or whatever it is. And it's an interesting story. Not a perfect book, but a lot better than Replay, you know.
But I think what makes the difference, the big difference between your books and this Harry August book is that these people make it.
No, wait a second. Let me finish off my point, because I'm getting to a point here.
Okay.
Maybe I've forgotten my point. Anyway, the point is that, like, the story of time looping is only one element to it. So you've got to, like you say, you've got to establish a character. What I did with my story, and what you can do with a movie, is you can see what it's like from outside of the character's point of view. You can see them from outside the character's point of view.
Yeah.
You can experience what it's like to be somebody meeting Phil on Groundhog Day. Of course, the camera always follows Phil. He's in every shot.
Yeah.
But we see what it's like for other people to react to somebody in that situation.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And like, you say, because
it's
told from his perspective.
It's so much from his point of view.
Yeah.
We're never outside of his. First 15 Lives of Harry August does it slightly different, because it's all from one person's point of view, but it's kind of written like a memoir. It's like, right, I've had this amazing story. Now let me go back. I've had 15 lives already, and I'm going to tell you about this.
Okay.
Now let's go back. And it's sort of like, at this age, I was here and I was doing it. And all the time, it's dropping in hints, because it's told so far, even in first person. I think, it's first person, but it's told from such a distant view, like looking back so far. With 15 lives, it's right there in the title, 15 lives worth of experience and storytelling ability, and knowing what's coming all the way through those 15 lives, that it can tell a really interesting story that's engaging all the time. What I did with my own story, Minding Tomorrow, is that I put in lots of... And let me put it this way. Because people who read Minding Tomorrow get a third of the way into the book, and they only a third of the way into the book realize that all of the character that time travel might be existing, and that all of the characters that you've been meeting up until so far, the viewpoint characters and the characters. It doesn't matter. I'm just saying that, like, the way that I wrote it is that you get a third of the way through the book before the puzzle, people start working at the puzzle that it's a time travel story, and then you get another third of the way through the book before you actually realize how the time travel is working and what the rules are of the time travel.
Yeah.
And then the last third of the book is kind of playing out the consequences, and even then it takes another two books later, or pretty much the last book in the trilogy, to really work out the consequences, and then it's sort of like it's like barrel going through. And I could do that by doing it in a non-linear fashion, by by looking at this character moving through time from different points of the time. So if you there could be three different ways of reading the book. You could read it how I wrote it and arrange the chapters. You could also read it how those chapters would go with, you know, in chronological time from the outside world. Also, I guess you could arrange those chapters by the chronological time for Nicholas, the main character, old Nick, who, you know, goes through that. You could read it from his point of view going all the way through.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to do that because I wanted the experience of reading the book to be like one of the people in Groundhog Day having Phil in their life and going, what the fuck? Like, how does Phil, what's going on here? You know?
Yeah.
And that I wrote a book where you can go into it not knowing that it's a time loop book. You understand what I'm saying? There's a way that you can tell a story from outside of the story, like from outside, and actually get a view into this person. And it's done really well in Groundhog Day in the movies, because you're outside, you can see what's going on. You can see the effects it has. Yeah. And in First 15 Lives About Harry August, is a kind of different style of telling.
Yeah.
Whereas replay, you're so much in one person's head.
Yeah.
There's one moment, or there's like one chapter, one part of a chapter, where we actually meet somebody else who is, mild spoiler, there's somebody else who can also loop back in time. And we see it from her point of view before she knows what Jeff is. It's like, oh, this guy who's hanging out. And she doesn't know yet that they know each other from a previous life or loop. And that's the only moment in this book where we see something from outside Jeff's point of view. I think there's like another two little bits at the end of the book as well.
Yeah.
But mostly, but also from her point of view, when she again doesn't know who he is. But it's one of those things where you're just going like, if there was this little moment here is what I realized the rest of the book was missing so much. And all we're getting is stuff from a point of view of someone who isn't particularly interesting and isn't particularly nice, and it's like you need something more than that.
Yes.
Like the First 15 Lives of Harry August, you're with somebody who's a real character and was, since they were born, they were a real character and they're living in an interesting point in life, you know. It's just
I think, like, as much as I would criticize, I do criticize this in this book as well, like you do. On the other hand, I always kind of feel like this had to be done. It had to be done that it is from first person. Because it is kind of like showing, if you would be in that situation, of course you are out because you have way too much knowledge about this stuff. But if any normal person who has never read anything about
time looping. Yeah, but everyone's seen Groundhog Day.
No.
There's even a musical now. There's another musical.
No.
Tim Minchin wrote this.
Yeah, but like, let's just say there's a normal person who had never encountered anything like that. And that's him. This is really him. So, and then it kind of goes through how he has to realize what's going on, how he has establishing the feeling like, okay, I have to change something. I have a crazy life, and then I have a life in the wood.
Every time travel story is done.
Every time travel book did this.
Even before this book was written, the people who travel through time, like one of the first books I reviewed for this was The Door into Summer. And it's an Isaac Asimov book of someone who's going through, you know, going forward through time or whatever it is. And it's like a similar kind of playing out in the future or, you know, what the time travel that they go through.
Yeah.
It's the same concerns. Oh, I get into the new thing. I need to earn some money. What do I do if I love somebody and then they don't recognize me because we loved each other in another time period? It's all very basic stuff. And while this book, there was never a moment when I thought, I'm not going to finish this book, because again, it's one of those things that you just kind of go, no, don't do that, it's going to pick up on the microphone. It was an audiobook, but it was a page turner. I was always like, you know, and this I said to you the other night when I fell, normally if I want to fall asleep, I'll put an audiobook on and generally it sends me to sleep, unless it's a book that I'm into and really interested in.
Yeah.
And then it keeps me up in a way. And that's what this book was doing. It was keeping me up, but it was never... I don't know.
There was a point when I actually felt more relief, because at some point it just got a bit more like there were more things happening. Like
more things happen?
Like there was this point when, like, after he went into the woods, lived by himself for several years or something, for several lives. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then at one point there was again like a speeding up the story once he met this other person.
Yeah.
That for me felt.
But again,
like
it was like the person that was the main driving relationship in the book.
Yeah, also that was more suddenly they were thinking about different things again. Yeah. Suddenly they were trying to find other people doing.
Yeah, and they started doing something. Yeah, that is true.
The pace went up again, and it was more story again.
Yeah, this is my notes after sort of like, you know, I say betting on sports, investing in IBM, the Apple scene from Forrest Gump, you know, all those different kind of things. Although Forrest Gump, of course, was later than this, but again, it's like if this is the stuff, it's kind of, you know, like going thought experiment 101, how do we answer all of these questions? Like, now I've answered all those questions, but that doesn't make a great story, if you know what I mean.
No,
like,
anyway,
the middle part of the story, bit bored of the sex scenes. There is a lot of stuff, and you talking about Peter F. Hamilton's sex scenes and stuff like that, I would have loved some Peter F. Hamilton sex scenes, because it meant that the rest of the storytelling would have been good enough that would have become an also interesting character moment. But here,
it was just kind of like, it wasn't like, when was it like? It felt for me like it was his second life. So
yeah,
it was quite relatively at the beginning.
There were a few times, there was like, when he went back in his second life, he met a woman, what was it? I can't remember her name. The woman he met in Vegas and all that kind of, again, no massive spoiler. This is not big spoilers. Even though it seems like we're spoiling a lot here, it isn't really. We haven't talked about the meeting.
She isn't even mentioned in the...
exactly. She isn't. But there's a lot of people who aren't even mentioned in the Wikipedia plot summary, and that's a big chunk of the beginning of the book.
Which exactly. Is like so this is like...
Here's the big thing about this. Then he finds someone else, and a wife here, and another wife there, and another person here, and everybody he meets, he's having sex with. Even if they're 14 years old, he's wanting to have sex, whatever's going on like that. It's a bit weird, you know, because, you meet somebody and then now they're younger than they were, but you're 18 and they're 14, but it's like, oh, well, you need to be together.
In their head,
and you're just
they are older, but, like, still, it's like,
and it's but it's one of those weird things that you would think that, like, the creepiness of... Okay, let's talk about this. The creepiness of time travel people has to be addressed within the book in a way that we understand that the people are there. For example, the opening pitch, or the original pitch for Back to the Future, was what would it be like to go back in time and accidentally be seduced by your mother, or something like that. That was the opening pitch, and then it became this big adventure thing, and it's now that you don't really think that being accidentally seduced by your mother is the main part of the story, but that was the heart of the story. That was the heart.
I mean, it is kind of still like...
It is that, but I'm saying that when you actually look at the full saga, the Back to the Future saga. Yeah, and he comes back and calls him the Calvin Klein. But that's what it is. So there has... The fundamental central part of this is what is creepy about going back in time and using time travel abilities to be able to seduce women. And it kind of has to be addressed in a way which everybody understands, like Groundhog Day, key thing, like, you know, the when they have the perfect date, and it's because he's manipulating all the way through, and it's all a lie, and we know it's all a lie, and it's not a way that he successfully gets the woman.
No,
it's not the way that it works, and it's the same.
It's
100% manipulative, and on all these other kind of, you know, that what this is really creepy and a bit weird has to be for the audience and kind of for the main character for us to identify with that person. And if the writing would have been better, it would have been, she's only 14, but we're both adults, and we have to straight away address the fact that we're both adults, and she's... In a way, I wanted that to be the moment where he gets locked up, but he never faces any consequences for anything he does in the entire book. Even, like... like, even before he can time travel and he destroys his bridge, no consequences. Fucks all these people all over the place, no consequences. Yeah. Breaks at wedding, breaks at marriages left, right and centre, like, all this different kind of stuff. Yeah. No consequences in it. Any of these destroying other people's lives, no consequences.
Yeah.
Of course, the consequences are sort of like, oh, woe is me, I'm one of the richest men on the planet, but, like, my daughter doesn't exist anymore because she exists in another timeline. Oh, like that. And I'm just like, no, but... If you're going to be that person, you also have to recognize that wanting to have sex with a 14-year-old when you're 18 is going to be a bit weird.
Also, he becomes a stalker first.
Yes, and later on he's a stalker, and then the whole thing where... And I'm just like, when he's sort of like, and then we ended up having sex, and I was like, you're manipulating this situation for her to agree to have sex with you. But you're not who she thinks. And it felt kind of really rapey.
But yeah.
But not because I understood what was going on and what he was going.
But there were two things like this. So, and the
you keep talking. I'm going to get a little bit more.
The awakening when she, like, yeah. She's still young, yeah. Like this 14-year-old girl. And he's watching her from the distance. And then her father gets all really, really upset about it, obviously. Mm. But later... He then gets together with her, even though she can't remember him. And I think that is...
Yeah, it's even worse. The point, the thing about him getting together with a 14-year-old, it would have been okay. But it's sort of like, oh, and the father thought it was really weird that I was 18 and she was 14 and I wanted to talk to her. But then, like, within 3 or 4 years later, it's like, and then I was part of the family and her parents really liked me. And I'm like, a bit too creepy. Which brings me... After all of this stuff that we've talked about here, which brings me to literally like the third to last line that we get from him, he says, spoilery, whatever, breaks out the cycle, and then he's living his own, he's not going to loop his life anymore, for whatever reason, not going to go into it too much. And he says, now I'm doing my own thing, and I don't know the news, what was going to happen in the news, and all that kind of stuff. And he says, relationships with women did not define him, or control her, or something like that. And my note is, really? Question mark, exclamation mark, question mark, exclamation mark. The only thing that has defined him so far, throughout the entire book, is his relationship with women.
Yeah.
There are so many sex scenes which are, all of the pivotal moments in this book, all of the pivotal story moments, either spring from or result in him having sex with a woman.
Yeah.
And seducing a woman, or and falling in love with a woman.
I think this comes back down to the pacing problem because there's actually quite a big thing in the middle where he's living a solitary life without anybody, but it is so short in the middle.
It's skipped over. It's sort of like, and then 9 years later, I didn't...
Long stretch there. A little bit in the middle.
Yeah, but he even at that point, he said, one of the things that really got to me was the celibacy. Even at that point, his isolation was defining... So it's one of those things that, like, the words in the book and the story that we're getting in the book, there could be an interesting story about this character. However, if Ken Grimwood, the author, had recognized what this character was actually like... It would be like following the life of the serial killer, but not that extreme. But it's sort of like, it's a character who's going, oh, I'm a nice guy, I'm a good guy, and people fall in love with me, and the parents of the people who I stalk, they also like me, and the kids of the woman whose relationship with the husband I just broke up, and I'm taking the kids like me as well, because I fly them in airplane. And
all these different kind of... this.
Yeah, and I'm just like...
Where was the husband?
And I'm just reading this...
saying, like...
Yeah, I'm just reading this stuff just going... There is a story being told here, which is like 4 or 5 levels below, and I can't get out. I can't decide if it's good writing, amazing writing, which is, this is buried so deep in there that you kind of have to piece it together and stuff like that. But then I'm thinking, this was written in the mid-80s when there was a one point someone comes in and says, oh, do you mind if I smoke? And they're like, yeah, go ahead and smoke. And I'm like, this is such an 80s book, because these days it isn't there at all, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That kind of... So the sensibilities, I think it has to be more blatant that the sensibilities of the author are different from the... main character, but because we spend all the time in the main character's head and there's no consequences for him and it always seems to be fine, there's no reflection on anything except him having sex with women and relationship with women, in the end I found it like there was that quandary, the dichotomy of what is the thing? Like, what is the book about? If it isn't about somebody who is defined by relationships with other people, who then at the end of the book says, my life isn't defined by relationships with people. And it is. The whole book is about relationships with people.
Yeah.
What is the book about?
Yeah.
It's that is what it's about, but it's about someone who is almost entirely unreflective on that
also,
thing.
Also, he keeps going back to, like, I think this theme where he goes back to the woman that he knew before, which they didn't remember him.
Yeah.
This has actually happened twice, or actually three times.
Three times in the book.
Three times.
Or more.
No, yeah, I think three times.
But is Linda his first wife? And then I don't need to go too much into it. But yeah, he tries it a few times.
Yeah, exactly. So he's not like, okay, let's just do a completely different life. Like, let me just go somewhere. I mean, yes, it is mentioned that he does go somewhere off in the meantime, but we never get to know about it.
Yeah, we only get to know the points where he tries to have sex with a woman and gets turned down, and then in the next life or two lives later, succeeds. And then once he's succeeded, then it's sort of like montage, montage, montage. And then that relationship's ended. And then he's going to do the same thing with some other women and stuff like that. So again, I don't want to say this is a bad book because of this. It's just that if there is a story which isn't this story in the book, what is that story?
Yeah.
And why isn't that story being told? Or if this is the story, it's being explored at such a low level that it comes off as, like, really creepy and a bit rapey in a way which even, like, Groundhog Day could do in, like, four scenes with him and Rita or whatever it is, you know, like, that. Say the time looping, gonna have the perfect date or whatever it is. And then it cuts off and it's like, right, now you've got to move on with it. And later on, he hangs out with Rita as a person, not as a date, and he even ends up in the room with, you know, it's all of that kind of stuff when he's honest and says, oh, this is what happened. You know, he actually does the thing where he says what happens with the time loop. You know, same thing in this. At some point, they're like, let's tell everyone that we can travel through time, and that ends up, you know, maybe good. Maybe good, I don't know. Anyway, so it's one of those things. What was the story being told?
Yes.
Because if it's the story that I got out of it, that story wasn't told very well or in any depth, but there wasn't another story in there.
I mainly got through this because it sped up at some points where I thought it wouldn't.
Ah, well, for me, a lot of it was slow. Okay.
I mean, it was... Let me do this quick read.
What's my last...
The weird kind... This is why I'm getting back to the curve. Because it did
you
have
mean
this...
the pacing graph.
Yeah, it kind of had this... I'm going on with my tractor. And then suddenly I'm in a sports car. And then suddenly I'm in a normal car.
But it's also a really boring sports car.
Yeah. And so this is kind of like this. What kept me going, first of all, these changes of pacing.
Yeah.
And also, I think in the middle, it got more interesting because,
They were doing stuff.
They were doing stuff. They were, like, actually trying to get behind
it. I want to get onto them doing stuff. I just want to do two of the three notes, and then we'll do a spoiler section, and we'll talk about... we won't talk about specific things, but I want to go into a little bit more depth about what the story is.
Yeah.
Even, you know, I know, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, or not what the story is, what the rules are. And I want to talk about what the rules of the world are.
Yeah.
But I don't want to spoil it for people. But I just want to say here, there was a quote near the beginning. He ran better than O.J. Simpson. I thought that was a fun thing. Because it's like, wow, if this guy could travel through time, if Ken Grimwood could see into the future, referencing people could run better than O.J. Simpson or something like that was it was quite funny that you just go, oh yeah, O.J. Simpson hasn't always been most famous for not quite being a murderer. He's also famous. I just watched the Dave Chappelle Netflix special about the four times that he met O.J. Simpson, you know.
Oh, right.
And the first meeting, it's sort of like, he even says, you know, and I met him and... the woman who soon wouldn't be his wife anymore, or something like that. He met them as a couple like 3 weeks before she was murdered by somebody, whoever murdered her, whoever did. Anyway, so that stuck out. Also, there's an epilogue. There's another. Somebody else discovers that they can loop through time, but they loop through time from the point that the other people ended looping through time. A guy called Sven. Whatever, I don't want to get too much into it.
Why are you even mentioning this?
Because they actually said, I'm now going to live... He lived from... Because what was happening was that they were living from 1962 to 1988. 62 to 88. And What?
1963.
Oh, was it 63?
Yeah.
Was it?
88. From 63.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's
right.
Yeah, just 25 years, of course. I can't do math. I wasn't doing the math. Hmm. It's not that I can't do math. I just didn't do the math. I was trying to do it from memory, but it's 25 years.
Yes.
And then in the epilogue, we meet a Swedish guy, and he says, I'm going from 1988 to 2017. And I was like, it's 2017 now. Yeah. Now it's 2017. So it's quite funny.
Grindelwald wanted to write a sequel.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying, that he wrote this in 1986, but it looped around in 1988, but he never mentions anything ever that happens in those last few years. Mm. There's no science fiction-y futurism in the book. It's purely about stuff in the past that leads up to that. Whereas, other stories in this way, you either mention famous events, and it doesn't, like, the first 15 lives of Harry August, it's all loads of, because it's like Victorian times up through Second World War, it's all meeting famous people and doing this and being in London during the Blitz and all these different kind of things. And, so there's all of that. And I felt that there was this book, which was, I don't know how old Ken Grimwood was when he was writing this, but this felt like him kind of retelling a story a bit or whatever. I mean, he's dead now, but what date was he born? Where he was born in 1944. Yeah, so again, he was in 20 years later. Yeah, so it's pretty much him.
He was kind of living his life again.
Well, that's the thing. It's sort of like, how much is this? And I don't want to say it was him and his life, but it did feel like it wasn't adding so much because it was taking mostly from stuff that we knew already. There was only a few times when it went into alternate history and it was sort of like, and then something else happened, like, it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald who shot JFK, or somebody else, and then another time, oh, this movie came out which he didn't recognize her, and that, so was that a different time or whatever?
He actually had his breakthrough.
Yeah.
With Breakthrough.
Oh, okay. That was his first novel.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, whatever. I don't want you to sit there. Yeah, I want to talk about this. So, my point being that it did feel like it did feel like a baby boomer writing about the swinging 60s. And you could kind of see, oh, he probably took LSD too. And he probably went through this, sexual evolution too. And I understand why that stuff was in the book. But as I was reading it, I felt like this is not my generation. Like, if I was to read a book, or as I say, if I was even to write a book, like, I would write the book being, like, either my generation of me living through that, through 25, an extra 25 years, or whatever. And again, not to bring it back to my own book, but I did write it being based in the future, so I could do fun science fictional stuff, and time loopy stuff in the future is good fun.
I think apart from the time loop, there is no science fiction in this.
No, it's not. It's a fantasy book.
Yeah.
It's a fantasy book, which actually brings me on to what I want to finish up this podcast about. We've been talking 51 minutes already, 52 minutes, but I do want to talk a little bit at the end here about the rules of the world and what the book is, like what the story of a book can be, like of a time looping book can be, and why I found this unsatisfying. Can we do this?
Yeah.
More spoiler territory?
Again, can I say?
Yeah, go for it.
But I mean, I think the story itself and the looping are two different things.
Yeah, that's literally the point I was wanting to make. Okay.
And in here, the looping is the story.
Yeah.
That's purely it.
Yeah, I mean, okay, let's just... to bring it back to Groundhog Day again, the story is partly about getting the... it's called a romantic comedy. It's often classified as a romantic comedy. But the story is about personal growth of Phil.
Yes. Totally.
Phil Connors, which is fine, and that there is romance and comedy in it as well. It's part of it. But then it does end when he gets the girl. He gets the girl and it ends. But the point is, it's like he hasn't won the girl, he's kind of earned the girl. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and also he didn't get the girl, the girl wanted him. And I think that is a massive difference.
Yes, with this book. But again, so what is the story of that? Okay, bring it back to another time loopy one, Edge of Tomorrow movie. It's aliens invading and you got to stop the aliens. Sure, but they work out what the rules are. But then part of the story is not just defeating the aliens, but to defeat the aliens, they've got to work out the rules to the world.
And they have to work together.
They've got to work together. Yeah. They've got to do the thing. They
have
learn
to
the
be
rules.
The team.
Don't get the blood transfusion. All these other kind of things. Whatever the story, successful story, satisfying story, whatever, there is a story there where they discover the rules to the world. Now, that's because that is a science fictional thing, and it's sort of like aliens come down, and it doesn't matter how hand-wavy it is, that you get this, the blue alien's blood splatters on you, and then you can loop back through time to the place where, you know... whatever, they discover there are rules.
Yeah.
It is explained. Hand-wavy, whatever, explained like that. But there are rules. The rules are explained. They discover the rules. They use those rules to get through to the end of it. Now, Groundhog Day didn't need to do that. There was even, they actually wrote a scene where there was this, Phil is rude to some woman in New Orleans or something at the start, and she places a curse on him. Yeah. They never shot that because they were just like, it doesn't need to be in the movie. Yeah. But they just wanted to go, well, how did this happen? But how it happened, like, what powered him or what caused him to stay in that day over and over again isn't what the movie is about. We do understand the rules when he dies. There's that movie that I showed you. Are you groundhogging? Did you remember that clip where two guy comes into the office and he's like catching things and replying to answers and says, "Are you Groundhog Daying at the moment?" And so I'm like, "Yeah, I am Groundhog Daying." "Oh, what are the rules?" And they go through like, "Can you die? Yeah. Have you killed yourself? Yeah. Have you had sex with this person? Yeah. Have you had sex with me?" So I'm like, I know everybody can know everything. I have literally nothing. Like, so that kind of thing of like, it's not knowing how it's happened. Yeah. Like, aliens are invading and then using time travel to defeat us by learning from, like, if we ever defeat or if any of them die, they get another go. If any of the main aliens die, they get to have another... Spoilers for live, die, repeat, whatever. But, you know, it's a fun movie. Watch it anyway. There's no spoilers. It's fun alien...
Fun action.
You can see Tom Cruise get shot in the face many times over and over and over, and it's really funny.
But it's a good movie.
It is a good movie. Anyway, my point being is that there's two different ways of doing it. You've got it there, like... But in my own book... Minding Tomorrow, what I didn't want it to be is a fantasy book like Replay and like Groundhog Day and First 15 Lives of Harry August, where it's never really explained what's going on. And that's what I'm saying. They say there's a whole section in this book that's sort of like, we need to discover how it works. Why, when we go back in time, are we going back in time shorter and shorter amount each time? Will we ever get out of this? If we die not at the end of the loop, if we die early, what's it going to... But they never discover, you know, they don't have enough loops to find out what's going on. And it also, actually diminishes down. The amount of time they go back in time diminishes over and over again until they never get a chance to do it. And then they pop out the other end and they never have learnt how it worked.
No.
And we as readers never do that. So that whole middle part of the book where they're going, what are the rules? How is this working? And I was reading this going, we're never going to find out, are we?
And also...
We're never going to find out.
Not only that, but also, are there others?
Yeah, like we do know there's others.
Yeah, we do know there's one other.
Yeah, and the person in Australia as well. There was someone in Australia who says, not this time, or whatever.
Yeah,
like that. But so you understand that there's others around.
There's this massive thing where they do a lot of effort and they put a whole life into this. And they put another whole life into trying to find out what is the consequence, what will be happening.
And there's no answer.
But there is never like this is a constellation in the time, whatever. Yeah. No, there's it never comes up.
We never know if, like, for example, in Groundhog Day, it's kind of assumed that every time he loops back in time, the rest of the world doesn't carry on without him.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like, it really is a life without consequences that he's learning.
It is kind of like, he is just doing this in this little town with these people.
Even when he says, if you could do everything and nothing mattered anymore, what would you really do? And the guys in the bar go, yep, that's how I feel as well. But the whole point of that is that it's only when he doesn't leave a life without consequences and he leads a life with many consequences, beneficial consequences, that then the life carries on for everybody.
Yes.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas in this book, they're talking a bit about, in Replay, Ken Grimwood is saying, like, or the characters are saying, well, in the future, the people who, my daughter does still exist, but in another time thing, but it's never confirmed that happens. It's just sort of like, well, this is my theory. And it's like, well, that's nice. But again, as I was listening to the book, I was realizing there's not enough time for them to actually work out what's going on. Either in this book or for them, once you actually started working at the pattern of it. And also,
at some point,
this is not what the book is about.
And they didn't care
anymore. He was defined by the relationship. He lived entire lives at the end, just moping around, waiting to get back into a relationship with somebody.
Yeah.
And then sometimes he did it and then it was creepy, but not... But that was what the book was about.
Yeah.
Whereas in my own story, Minding Tomorrow, first of all, I didn't want it to be fantasy and I didn't want it to be... consequence-free and easy for them. In all of these other stories, all of these, if somebody dies, that's it. They just get to go back to the start and start their life again. That's part of the genre. Except within my story, I wanted to make it that the rules were already there. The main character worked out how to send his memories back in time, put in a lot of effort into sending that back in time. And then when he sends his things back in time, he feels violated by his mind being invaded and then has to deal with that with other people. Again, I'm not the best writer in the world, so it's not always that clear. But the point is, it's that it is deterministic in a way that somebody has to determine, it has to be determined for it to happen.
Yeah.
In a way. And also, if you carry on reading certainly the last novel in the series, you realise there are massive consequences for this to happen, and what does happen to the rest of the world each time. In fact, it's pretty clear by the end of Minding Tomorrow that there are major consequences of him being able to send things back in time, but it only becomes really clear in the final book of the series of what's going on and what consequences are there. And then you've got to decide, is it me continuing to live my life? Are the good things that I could do worth this sacrifice?
Well, I think there was this one section in this book, you know, when they went out to the world trying to say what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of consequence-y.
But no.
Don't just calm down. But it was like, it wasn't hugely... there were no consequences for
them.
No, there were a little bit. They were like put into this place. But it was never really like dramatically like, oh, something like,
yeah,
you
but,
know.
But what was unsatisfying for that was even that made the rules not work.
Yeah.
Like they again.
I mean, the consequence was there. That he lost the relationship.
Yes. Yeah, again, the story was that what actually was happening in the world didn't... Because if Ken Grimwood had balls, he would have set off a nuclear bomb, but it never happens.
Yeah.
And this is someone who's writing before the Berlin Wall fell. You know, like, they're looping back at the same... between Tiananmen Square...
Yeah.
Between Tiananmen Square and the fall of the Berlin Wall, like, literally it's the month before the Berlin Wall is when they're looping back. But of course he published this 2 years beforehand.
Yeah.
So he wasn't writing, even though the Berlin Wall was about to fall.
I mean, 86, it was still like really...
No, but I'm saying they loop back around. Oh no, it's 88. Okay. So yeah, no, I'm getting mixed up. But whatever. He's writing about the Cold War, but when everything goes wrong, he doesn't have the nerve as an author to set up an atom bomb or a hydrogen bomb or anything like that. So my point being that him playing around with, oh, we've disturbed time, but beforehand they couldn't disturb time.
No, but later on they did. Tried to avoid...
Yeah, he tried
JFK
to avoid
being shot, and then he was shot by somebody else.
Yeah,
I wasn't quite sure why.
Yes, but the point is that it wasn't ever like the whole idea that the world will find its way back on track again, like the time is self-correcting.
Yeah.
At the start of the book, when he had to give up trying to be a superhero in the world, the time would be self-correcting, and then later on, when he had to lose the woman, time had to be non-self-correcting, and history had to be able to change when they actually put... So I was like, which one is it? Is it minor? Is it because it was just accumulated and all this kind of stuff, accumulated, and how much could they have pushed it? But again, this story was, because it's a fantasy story, and these rules aren't set, these rules aren't clear, it isn't about somebody working out what the rules are and then playing them through, it's somebody who wants to write a story about a creepy guy who uses time travel ability to stalk and have sex with numerous women throughout time. That is the story he's writing. It's really unsatisfying from a time travel point of view, more so than Groundhog Day, which isn't a story... I mean, it's also a story about somebody being creepy and trying to seduce somebody, but that isn't the totality of the story. And aliens invading
and
Normandy...
He is growing through the story. Like, he's becoming a better person.
Yes, but this...
And I don't think he was a better... Like, especially, like...
At the end, he just regresses...
The sentence that you said...
Well, I'm not defined by women.
Yeah.
He is defined by...
He didn't change at all.
But also, in his second to last... Oh, his last life, he once again does the really rapey taking advantage of somebody, having sex with them and starting a new relationship. And she was like, I feel violated about this.
Yeah, and he didn't really understand it.
And he was like, oh, no, but this is great. I love you. I loved you even if I didn't know the brain was... And again, in my own story, this same kind of scene happens, but it's much more explicit. It was like, I wrote the same scene, but there was a story reason for it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
In my story, he had to be with somebody while they were asleep to put the memory transplanting thing in their brain. And then when they woke up in the morning, they'd have all the brain moves. But the way that the main character decided to do that was a way that he had, you know, consensually agreed with someone. Mm. Like, I'm gonna have to sleep with you. And as soon as we do this, this is what I have to do to make, to bring you back to me so we can spend another lifetime together.
Yeah.
Was in Replay, it was just something that he was just, it, that wasn't what... If you understand, like, in the book that I wrote, him being a creepy guy and seducing someone with his knowledge of where they... Because he's already spent 15 years with them by that point or something like that. He was doing that to be able to give them their memories back in this life and for them to continue on that relationship. And it was something that he felt weird about, and they both felt weird about, but that was the sacrifice that he had to make to bring back someone he loved. And in this book, he was just doing this to women who he knew would never know, and was lying to them about it, and again, kept getting away with this with no consequences.
Although I say, I think that it was always, like, him getting back with Pamela.
Mm.
Was always
we're
like
in the spoiler section here. It's okay.
Okay, so it's like there was always the consensus that they would get back together, but never before she was back.
Yes, but then he did do that.
Yeah, exactly.
He did do that. She and wasn't 14 anymore.
Yeah,
but she was still married with kids.
Yeah,
and he was still. Again, I was just a bit. Oh, yeah, it's just on the edge. Like I say, if the story had really addressed this, and there'd been some sacrifice and consequences to this, but there never was. It was always just a creepy guy being able to use his time travel superpowers and just getting away with it consequence free. And even at the end of the book, they're like, we be together in the future? And it was all like left open ended. It's like, oh, these people might have a happy ending together. And I'm just like, no.
I was actually quite annoyed by the fact that he just got out of this loop and just had to then got his life back and was able to live on.
Yeah.
I was pretty annoyed by this. I thought it would have been better if there would have just been a cut, and they die. That's it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, as it was going at the end, I was like, oh, this is good. But then I looked at it and I'm like, oh, there's still 10 minutes of the book left.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a great ending. This could have been the great ending to the book.
Really, the epilogue? Really?
Oh, I didn't mind that. I was like, yeah, whatever.
Oh, I thought, oh, no.
But you know, in the movie Groundhog Day, there was going to be an epilogue where the next day Rita wakes up and she's then living the same life again. Of course, they took it out.
Yeah.
But that was in one of the scripts was Rita then loops back. She then lives her next day over and over again or whatever it was. Like, and she had to go through the same thing. It wouldn't be in a sequel, but it was like one of those like, oh, and then you zoom out and they're still in the Matrix, even though they've zoomed out one more level.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Mixed feeling book to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, for me, it was a page turner. It is a historical artifact, but just watch Back to the Future or Groundhog Day or read The First 15 Lives of Harry August. It's a similar... Or even Minding Tomorrow, my own novel. Read that, because... Oh, yeah, this is just what I want to say. Just now we're in spoiler territory, is that when people say, oh, it's like this thing. I was reading this and I was like, oh, my book, the moment that he time loops, he goes back and gets the memories again when he's in the halls of residence at university, like in college. He's in his dorm room at college. Yeah. it's literally the same setting. And then he goes, and at one point he's like, no, I've got to get away. And he goes out and he goes back to, and I'm just like, oh, wow, that's really similar. Yeah. Like that. But of course, I think it's because we both took the point in life where you should be starting the story. It's like you are now an adult.
It's the perfect time to start again.
It's the perfect time to start again. But then he started going away from that. And I'm like, but it doesn't happen. Now, again, if in this book, each time he went back into a younger body, it was kind of like, and now I'm in it. And again, I mentioned this in my own book, sort of like, I think it's in the third book, the, you know, what is it? There's Mighty Tomorrow, Combat, and then Broken Glass. He even says, every time I come back into this young body, I think I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm a mature, I'm like a 40-year-old guy, like I've lived 20 years, and I get back into my young body, and fucking hormones take over, and I've got a young brain, and I do stupid shit, and I can't do timekeeping anymore, and I'm not doing any good, and I'm just, you know, following my tail, like following my dick around and stuff like that. And that's something that I kind of wanted to write into the story, that he kind of goes, oh, I wrote this to-do list to myself from the future. Ah, fuck it, I'll get to that at some point. Yeah. I don't like... And he even the character within the book recognizes that constantly being back in a younger body is fucking, like, it's difficult for him. And in here, I kept thinking, oh, he's back in a younger body, that's why he wants to have sex with people, and that's why sex with the person is the most important thing of the relationship. And for the author, like, he keeps writing about, like, it's sort of like, and then we met each other and they recognized me, and then my fingers were inside her vagina again, and I'm just like, whoa, like, there's so many other connections that you could be making now, which literally isn't you having sex while on a train going through the Canadian Rockies. This is not the most important thing. And it wasn't that he was 18-year-old again all the time, because he kept, at that point they were like 30 or 35, and I was just like, this isn't what is the thing that makes this person a horn dog, like, all the way through. Even though he's like, you know, when he's looping back round, he's getting up to 43, he meets the same woman that he used to meet when she was 14 and he was 18. Like, but whatever. I can kind of understand that a 14-year-old and 18-year-old who know each other, and I'm not saying it isn't creepy and weird, but you can kind of understand there's
the minds are like not,
a sexual frisson between them. And then, but then later on he was like, and she's 41 and I'm 43, and then we're fucking, and then everything is about them fucking and meeting up and fucking, and then next weekend we meet up and fuck, and then it's we meet up and fuck, and we get together and we fuck more. And I'm just like, you're not 18-year-olds anymore. First of all, you're like 140 years old at this point, subjectively, but you're in a 43-year-old body, and I am going to be 37 this year, and I can tell you something, that my body is a different sexual body than it was even when I was 30 years old, let alone 18 years old. Like, when you're 18, you're, and a guy, your entire psyche is wrapped up in, when am I going to have sex, either at all or next or whatever it's going to be. Like, that is what it is. Every time that you go out, every interaction that you have with a woman, every kind of thing, it's all wrapped up in, when am I going to have sex next?
I think,
and
I
that
think,
is that I can be written into an 18-year-old character, but 43-year-old, 120-year-old, 43-year-old, you're just like, fucking hell, just get on.
I think I will at some point write a book about how men got tamed with estrogen.
Really?
Yes.
That's it.
Because I think that should be the next...
Tell you something. Stop hitting the table.
Is that done already?
Let me give you this massive long reading list of books where men don't exist anymore.
No, I'm not saying...
Yeah. Anyway, what the premise that you're thinking of, I can assure you.
I know.
SFBRP listeners, send in a list of books
for
Juliana to read where men have been estrogenated.
But I would love, because we have seen this book, as we said before, several times now.
Yeah.
Always from the perspective of a man.
Yeah.
Why always a man? I mean, what wouldn't a woman? I don't know.
To be honest, maybe, it's because men tell the stories, and when the men tell the stories, they tell it from the men's point of view.
I mean, he tried to do it from a woman's point of view.
Yeah, like for one chapter. And there's the bit where she makes a movie, and I'm just like, oh, that's interesting. That like, he's always like, I'm going to play the stock market, and so, and she did that as well. But then she was like, I'm going to be creative and give birth to things.
And I will.
And you're always
a
doctor and stuff. And
a doctor. And she's becoming a painter. And
why wasn't it her story all the time? Like, why couldn't you? She was way nicer and better. Yes. And it kind of felt like he never deserved her.
No.
And the only reason they got together and did anything, because they were the only ones.
The story.
They were the only two people with that superpower. Yeah. So of course they're going to find each other more. But I never felt there was a strong connection between them, except that, like, you, like, I was going to say you and me. My point is that, like, if, like, what are the chances that you and me met each other? I know, what am I trying to say? My point being is that it's difficult to actually say this because it's a fantasy situation, so it's, like, really difficult to put yourself into this. But, like, the point is that, like, just because somebody can also travel back through time doesn't immediately make them the perfect person for you.
No.
And in this case, he becomes obsessed with her. But I'm just like, but what about, like... It never really made sense to me that is the thing that they had in common.
We only got a glimpse of his life because everything that was interesting got like passed by so quickly. But if I would like, I would do way more of a time loopy book like the Harry August book.
Yeah.
I would actually like really live different lives with where in one life I noticed I'd never in my life when I was in a certain age. There was just no entry for me to the tech world. I'm very interested in tech.
Like, because like, you were saying, I wish I could have been a scientist in another life.
I wish I could have been, I would have been able to do the programming.
But like, Jeff Winston was so boring.
Yeah.
Because it was like, right, this time I'm going to get my money. Yeah, well, no, he was a radio producer. Radio interviewer.
Journalist.
Yeah, journalist. And he did later, news desk.
And then he was a writer at some point.
Oh yeah, wow, yeah, and then he was. I know he was suddenly, and then he was suddenly a Pulitzer Prize winning author.
Oh yeah, the Pulitzer Prize. Oh.
Yeah, but that point didn't make sense because I'm like, there's always a thing which is done very explicitly in Edge of Tomorrow, where they can train day after day after day and become super soldiers, super warriors by learning how to do stuff. So it's not just their minds that go back in time. It's their like entire nervous system and body and strength. So you see Tom Cruise at the start, he's some PR guy or something like that. He's like just a normal guy and he just dies almost straight away.
Yeah.
But then by the end, he's like, you see him going through, and that's how Rita knows that Tom Cruise can travel through time, because she's like, the only way that you can get that good at being an action hero is if you've looped this over. And that's how she knows. She's like, when you come back in time, see me, and then just shoots herself in the head. I can't even remember what she does. Yeah. But the point is that it's very explicit. And it's less explicit in Groundhog Day, but it's still there that you can, you know, he learns how to play the piano and carve ice and all that kind of stuff. So it's there as well. Whereas in this, it's never really... It's kind of explicit that she isn't good at painting. Or when you know how Paula, she sometimes paints and then sometimes doesn't.
Pamela.
But then...
But she studied that at university. It was one of her things.
But my point is, like, when did he suddenly become a Pulitzer Prize winning author? Like, did he just pull that out of nothing? But it isn't like, in the other books where it's sort of like, oh, somebody wrote this song and now I'm going to write that same song. Ah, I've written a hit song. And everyone's like, wow, that's a really good song.
Yeah.
But it's a book. He couldn't send back the physical book. He had to have the memory of what the book... You know, that's really difficult to have, like, a word-for-word memory of a classic book. But then you've got to be... Anyway... It's just one of those things. It's like it was never clear. Like they did remember some stuff in their head and did prepare to remember some stuff in their head.
Yeah.
But then he also suddenly became an amazing writer. And it's like, it's not that easy to become a Pulitzer Prize winning author.
But I think in
if
this
you've got
book,
many lifetimes to do it, you can practice it. But we never saw him practice.
But I think he concentrated on the wrong lives.
Yeah.
Like I was
exactly. I didn't care enough about. Like I say, if this book was about somebody whose goal in life was to go back in time and creepily have sex with women, that could
one
be
one of his lives was become a drugged addict. Sex.
No, that was the same. That was the same life that he went and lived in the forest as well. He did all of that and got a bit too crazy. And then
I think that was his next life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he did that for the entire life.
He did that for the entire life.
Okay,
and
I thought
totally...
I must have miscounted because I thought he went a bit wild on drugs and sex and then was like,
no.
I'm going to live
really,
in the forest.
He had this whole life and then he decided, okay, this wasn't the good thing.
I mean, it was so
boring.
But
we had to all live through
this
whole
thing. We had like eight sex scenes in that life.
I think it was constantly.
Yeah, he was constantly having sex, but we had to read about him being jerked off like three different times.
Oh, yeah. And this makes it worse, I tell you. It makes it worse when you have to listen to it.
And I listened to that after, weirdly, after the two of us having sex in bed last night, and then I put my headphones in. Oh, don't slap me. But then I put my headphones in and then had to read about the guy being jerked off on a beach in Saint-Tropez. I'm just like, I don't like this guy. He shouldn't be having this, like, what? Anyway, I'm so sorry for ranting about this, and now we've gone an hour and 20 minutes about this book. And I've got to do the Audible ad.
The more I talk about it, Audible actually makes it worse.
Well, that's the thing.
Now you make an Audible ad.
Yeah, let me just do this. Quite interesting. This book, oh, it's asking me to rate it because I just finished it. Where is it? Okay. Part 2, Ken Grimwood. Oh, no, don't start playing. Book information. I'm just trying to find who was the reader of the book. Narrated by William Dufresne. Don't know. Perfectly good. I was going to say, when was the audiobook recording? Look at when the audiobook was recorded.
2020.
Yeah, 1st of January 2000, the year 2200. So this book, this book is from 183 years in the future, which is quite funny. Is that really? I didn't notice that before. Anyway, so if you want to listen to this book as an audiobook, I say don't. Go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And download for free the first 15 lives of Harry August. The first 15 lives of Harry August is what you should do. And then listen to the first and read. Actually, listen to it, because the first 15 lives of Harry August, I think, was narrated by, what was his name? Kenny Lee. Oh, I'm going to search for it now as well. Yeah. First, anyway. It's the same author who actually reads quite a few of the Peter Kenny. Also narrates some of the culture books. Ian M. Banks' culture really series. Good. Peter Kenny, really good author, a really good narrator, and he narrates the first 15 lives of Harry August. Really good at it. It's a fun book. I don't know how many stars I gave it, but after reading Replay, I say don't bother with Replay. Go for the first 15 lives of Harry August, and do that. Get a free book. Start your Audible trial today by going to audibletrial.com/SFBIP. Also, go to my website and click on other projects and find the link. Actually, in every blog post, it's automatically generated. You can find a link to my own book called Minding Tomorrow, which I've spoiled a little bit, but there's a lot more into it. A lot of fun science fiction exploration. That's another reason why I set my book in the future. Like, it starts off today. Like, the beginning point of each loop is today, and it ends 20 years in the future.
Yeah.
I found my first ever writing of that, of what's going on in the book.
It was in 2017 or
when? No, when I wrote it, the first time I tried to write it in like 2003 or 2004.
Yeah.
And he went to the London Olympics in 2016, but they weren't in 2016, they were in 2012. But that's a fun thing. So we'll get on, and we should review the other books in that series at some point.
I tried to find the name of the first person he used to get it. She has this kind of
Linda.
Not her first. The she has this such a slutty name.
Yeah, because he meets her in I don't know. It's not great. It's not good. It's a bit too much. But again,
I want another name.
But the weird thing. Let me just say this as a contrast between my own book of this. Yeah. I wrote that book in 2008, probably before I even knew what the Bechdel test was. And then you read this kind of thing, and you're like, do two named character women ever have a conversation about
not a man?
About not a man. And I think me reading back over my own book. Again, it's one of those things that accidentally, because it's focused so much into one character, and it's this one character only ever interacts with one person at any one time, you know, because that's the whole point of the book, is that it's sort of like told from, a lot of it's told from people looking into the life and seeing one person do stuff, even though a lot of it's told from that person's point of view, but it's that's the view of the book.
Yeah, I think in the sequels...
Yeah, it's a little bit more. Well, one of the viewpoint characters in the second book is a woman.
Yeah.
Even though there's not enough and many other women, but it is also about a woman who works in the tech industry and what it's like to be a woman working in the tech industry.
Yeah.
So, but my point being that, like, what my sensibilities now in 2017 are very different from when I first wrote this book in 2008. Yeah. Which, so I know I've grown as an author now that I'm writing another story, which is a science fiction. It's a musical, but I'm doing the story and establishing the characters for a science fiction story.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I'm thinking now about gender and sexuality and politics, you know, gender politics and all that other kind of stuff in the book is very different from what I thought in 2008. When I read this book from 1986, it's so foreign to me.
It's so dated.
It's so dated. In a way, but it's not But the story, like I say, the story is about something which is, it makes me feel a bit dirty reading it. Like I said, when we watched Lethal Weapon, I was like, oh, I really like used to enjoy this. But there's some weird, creepy, yeah, like 40-year-old men and 15-year-old girls. And if you touch my daughter, I'll kill you. And you're just like, ugh, like, don't be talking about your 15-year-old daughter as a sexual object or your workmate. It's like, it makes you, yeah, feel a bit weird, and like the racism and sexism from the 1980s or whenever, yeah, that movie was, or, yeah, early 90s, or whenever Lethal Weapon was, it kind of made me feel a bit dirty. Whereas we watched Under Siege, again, for no reason, I just put it on as a joke, and then we ended up watching it all the, yeah, way through. Again, early 90s, sex, like gender representation, the only female character in the entire movie, there's like a secretary and a stripper,
yeah,
and but it kind of gets away with it because it's set on a navy ship,
yeah,
and all of the characters, I mean, of course they're going to be men because they're all sailors in a time when there were no women sailors.
It kind of now in my brain could say, this is making a point. Of course, it wasn't at the time.
Because there is that kiss. Easy. There is that unearned kiss at the end. Yeah. Just like, that didn't work. But if that kiss didn't happen, you were like, you know what?
Yeah.
Under Siege, not bad in terms of that. Of course, you do get to see some boobs. You understand. Yeah, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, but the point is, it's sort of like there's a level of like committing to the attitudes of the time,
yeah,
where Replay really hits that wrong for me, because I'm reading it and I'm going, it's like reading, oh, good a thing, good example. It's like reading Heinlein, like Stranger, yeah, in a Strange Land, which was written at a time in the 60s. It was all like, yay, sexual revolution, or before that, sexual revolution, yay, and all that kind of stuff. And Replay is written by someone who went through that. And it's like, yeah, of course we can fuck anyone and do this and stuff, and women aren't important and they're only prizes. And it's kind of, yeah, written from the point of a baby boomer's point of view.
Yeah.
And now me, it, like, reading also, this stuff... It's totally different. We got to wrap, yeah, up soon, but let's just be the last point.
There was this one bit where he went back into the 60s, and then he was rambling about or talking about it wasn't quite there yet, the sexual freedom and stuff.
Oh, no, it was in Boston. It arrived in Boston earlier than it did in Georgia or whatever,
yeah,
it was.
So, yeah, and then how the way she didn't want him to touch her, and then, yeah, how he found that really weird. And,
yeah,
and then I was thinking, like, okay, you have been through these lives before. You should know how this worked, yeah, at the time.
But also, the author, Ken Grimwald, was writing for an audience of people who were also baby boomers,
yeah,
who'd gone through the sexual, you know, who'd done that, who'd experienced that, who knew what the summer of love was and all that kind of stuff, and lived through that and experienced that. Because if you're alive in 1986 and you're reading this book, like an adult fantasy, time loopy science fiction book, yeah, literary book, you are the target audience. Yeah. Whereas if I would have read this when I was 19, I would have been like, okay, that's a bit weird and sexy, but I'm not grown up enough, and I'm not in the 2000 and, you know, I'm not in the 2010s or whatever the, yeah, whatever decade we're in now. But that's the kind of thing. It's sort of like, it misses me from a historical thing that it's not written in the 60s of someone going through that. It's kind of like someone looking back and going, oh, isn't it a pity that AIDS exists now when we can't just fuck everyone, and including 14-year-olds and married women. It felt like somebody who was kind of missing the age of innocence where you could fuck a 14-year-old and the parents, or say that you're going to in the future fuck a 14-year-old, and the parents are like, yeah, well, as long as you don't touch her until she's 18. And I'm just like, ugh! It kind of makes me go a little bit creepy, like, ugh, like, oh, sorry, I'm doing this. Anyways, that's what I want.
Yeah.
I don't want a book where someone says, is it okay if we wait until she's 18, if I can fuck your daughter? And the parents are like, yes, and you can be my friends, and we're going to be proud of you in the future. That kind of thing just isn't me. And the entire book wasn't that bad, but the entire book was based around a character who that was that character.
Yes.
Who was the one, I'm going to break up
Creepy
weddings.
Old guy.
I'm going to kind of half rape somebody, but not really rape. But then the woman also said, I feel violated, and, yeah, leaves her. So he Ken Grimwood knows that that is the bad situation to be in.
In that situation, he made it sound like she was...
She was being ungrateful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, no, no, it's been fine that I've been having sex with... I've manipulated into being having sex.
I loved you the way that you didn't know me.
This other person that you were also... This other person that you don't think you are now.
Loved me.
I was having sex with her as well. And she's like, no, but that was... That's my... Yeah. Anyway.
My body.
Anyway, an hour and a half on this podcast. Yeah. Let's talk... you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Bode. You can follow Juliana and chat to her on Twitter as well. J-U-K-U Berlin.
Right. I'm not that much of a Twitter person.
No, but whatever. You're there. On Instagram, I'm Luke Burridge on Instagram. You're Juliana Kunzendorf on Instagram. And on YouTube, you can follow me and my juggling and performing stuff and music stuff as well.
And vlogs.
Vlogging as well. You can check that out. And I'm Luke Burridge on YouTube too. You can find me there. Email me, luke@juggler.net. Also, become our friends on goodreads.com. Yeah, normally we have a look on Goodreads, but we've gone on a long enough... What's the overall rating?
4.16.
This is... I can tell you now that all of the people who are rating this are baby boomers and older people who read it long enough ago that they're not disgusted about it anymore. Anyway.
Not so sure, but Jenny also didn't like it.
I like the concept. I thought the main character was a bit douchebaggy. Yes. Tell you what, that's why Jenny has her own podcast and is a much better book reviewer than both of us.
Is that Reading Envy, Jenny?
Oh, no, is it not? It might not be Reading Envy. No, because I think Jenny is Reading Envy, Jenny. Anyway, so yeah, it might be a different Jenny. But that she says, interesting. Yeah, Jenny's got way more books than that. But that's so much better. I like the concept, but thought the main character was a bit douchebaggy. Welcome to the last hour and a half of our podcast, which is what we've been talking about. Of course I like this idea. I've written a book about this, a series of four books about this idea.
I must say...
And a musical based on Groundhog, which is also this idea.
I did like some things about it.
It wasn't all bad. I got through it. I'm going to give this... I know it's weird to say this after how much I've bagged on this, but I'm not going to give it one star or anything like that. So I'm going to just give it 2 stars because... Or, I'd say 2.5 stars because it was an interesting read historically, but it wasn't an enjoyable read in the way that I thought it might be.
And the pacing.
And the pacing, not so good either. Yeah. What are you going to give it? What star rating?
2.5.
Really? Yeah. Oh, okay. We average out 2.5 stars. Your 2.5 stars to 2.5 stars.
Yeah.
Okay, pretty good. Right, that's it. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.